podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues. Three Opinions. One Everton Podcast.
Welcome to episode 177 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Me and Pete at the moment, Lee is having a few technical difficulties, hopefully should be in the next few minutes or so. But Pete, thank God, praise the Lord, we're sitting here on a Monday morning, bank holiday Monday morning, very early. Everton survived. We were out there yesterday. Horrendous to live through, to sit through, the build-up, the journey to the ground, the walk from Everton Valley to Goodison Park and everything in between. It was a horrible day, wasn't it? It was me and you at times were sort of standing there almost not knowing what to say, sitting in the ground before the game, unsure what to say, horrible sickly feeling. And I think the overwhelming feeling is literally relief once again, isn't it?
That's the word, Mike. That you literally taking the word right out of my mouth, because a few people have said to me, "Are you pleased? Are you pleased that you won, that you stayed up? You know, did you enjoy it? Oh, you know, the atmosphere must have been amazing." And I mean, oh yeah, kind of, but no, no. I mean, I'm not being downbeat about it, but you know what happened last season and you know staying up in the Crystal Palace game, that felt like a novelty. You know, that felt like a shock. How are we in this position? And you know we turned it round and we came back. We stayed up in unbelievable fashion. This season, it's become a pattern, and we were teetering on the edge of the cliff. I mean, when that Leicester score started filtering around the ground, and you know we were down, it was just a sobering moment. You're right. It was horrible to be there. It was horrible to be a part of. And we were joking on the way down, weren't we? About would we rather be in the stadium or would we rather be at home? I think I'd rather be in the stadium, but it was a tough watch, and I don't think really any of the season's been enjoyable at all. Probably after about the first kind of six or seven games where things started to kind of tail off and we started to get into trouble, really. But yeah, relief is the word. Massive relief, but big rebuild needed.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a huge summer, isn't it? And the main thing is we've got to this point now where we can. And we can look forward, and we know we're going to be a Premier League side. Obviously, there was no thoughts before the full-time whistle yesterday about, well, from me and my potential transfers, even the new kit. I've not even thought about it until this morning when I tweeted Hummel and said, "When's it out?" You know, it's one of those things where we've been in limbo for so long because we all knew it was going to go deep into the season in terms of, you know, when our fate was going to be decided, and we wanted to avoid a last day relegation decider. We didn't do, and having obviously us along with Leeds and Leicester, it was just a day full of emotion. You know, as you mentioned, you know, scores as we said last week would filter through. They did filter through, and you know, people getting any kind of phone signal was an absolute miracle. There was radios everywhere. And a gentleman a couple of seats away from me was telling us the score. So we knew Leicester had gone ahead. That was after we thought West Ham had gone ahead. And then Leicester all of a sudden seemed to lose their goal on one of the goal apps. Then it reappeared again. So we knew, at that point, we were down. And half-time, we were down. And it was quite numb to it all. You know, I didn't sit there. I wasn't threatened. It was strange in a way. I wasn't threatened about the fact that, you know, at that stage we were down. It was just a case of, it was always up to us to go and score a goal and it was in our hands. And I hate that expression, in our hands, but it was. You know, we knew at the start of the game, score one goal effectively, win the game 1-0. That's all that we've got to do. And as time was going on, Leicester scored. Leeds were behind early, but Leeds were less of a concern to me. They always were. For them to beat Spurs by 3 goals, and for us to, you know, at the very worst, you know, draw, it was one of those. They were less of a concern, but Leicester were a big concern after that point against Newcastle the other day. But it was just, I don't remember 94. I was there in 94 against Wimbledon. I didn't go in 98. So this is my first experience as an adult on the last game of the season, living through that. And it was just, it was horrifying at times, but also, like I say, I still felt fairly relaxed. It was a little bit strange. I don't know why. Maybe I knew something. I was expecting a Neil Maupay winner, I've got to be honest with you. But Lee, you've managed to jump on. What are you feeling this morning? Me and Peter just said, you know, it was just immense. It's just immense relief. After when that full-time whistle went, everything's just sort of, the weight that's been on our shoulders for months just fell away. And it's all it is now is relief. And hopefully this summer can now act as a reset, as a springboard to better days.
Well, it's felt like a never-ending journey, hasn't it? Just feels like it's just gone on forever. And I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. I'd rather have been in the stadium with you boys. As you know, I was away, unfortunately, away in Portugal, so I couldn't make the game. But I watched it on Sky. I'm never doing that again. They dramatise it like it's the next Spielberg movie. It's absolutely unbelievable. The amount of cut shots they were doing to the crowd with the head in the hands, and then the guy's, you know, elevating his voice. And I was like, I had to put it on mute in the end. I think that's your tactic when you watch it on Sky, and it might, you tend to put it on mute, to be fair.
Yeah. especially if you've got Carragher as the co-commentator, the best thing to do.
They don't half dramatise it, you know, cut into different grounds. Oh, they've had a chance, and some guy spoons it about 20 yards over. You know what I mean? It's pathetic. It's trying to generate interest. But anyway, back to the game. And you know, you've got to say the fans were unbelievable, weren't they? Absolutely unbelievable. Getting behind the team again, you know. And you know, before the game, the scenes looked incredible. The noise. I don't know whether you guys have heard the commentary from Neville about the gantry. Did you hear about that? Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I don't know whether you've seen it, Pete, but Neville's basically saying this place is shaking. This is. He goes, I've never been on a gantry like it, where it's actually physically moving when the goal went in, which is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, Goodison. I mean, bless her. I mean, we'll miss her massively. And that goal will go down sometimes maybe for the wrong reason alongside Gareth Farrelly, you know, alongside Graham Stewart, obviously Dom last year, for the wrong reasons, but they will go down, you know, in history, won't they? But yeah, I mean, feelings right now are just kind of, like you just said, a weight off your shoulders, relief, a bit of anger maybe as well. You know, I think the chanting at the end, I think all of us were that really, in terms of, you know, if Mashiri's everything now, he's got to come out now and make these decisions and, you know, get rid of the people that we know that weren't in attendance yesterday, and just reset the whole thing. But yeah, at the moment, like I said, it's a mixture of complete relief and, you know, we can never do this again.
I don't think my heart would actually take doing this again. You know, it was it's been a horrendous couple of seasons, hasn't it? You know, to go through what we went through last season, and that was, as I said this last week, you know, you can have one season like that, and it's an anomaly. When you have more than one, when it becomes two, three, it starts to become a habit, and there's only so many times you can dodge the bullet. It's that simple, really. You know, Leeds found it out. They went to the last game last season, survived. They went down in the last game this season. Everton are constantly on the edge, and it's unacceptable. It's massively unacceptable. So I'm not going to sit here and be full of the joys of spring, so to speak, because we survived. Yeah, we're all delighted. Of course we are. It's effectively something that could have saved our club. Let's be brutally honest about it. But it's unacceptable yet again that we find ourselves in this position. But it was funny, you know, before the game, you know, I was thinking about little things that what might work. I'm not superstitious at all. I'm just, well, I say that I've quite often over the course of this season worn the same clothes that I've worn to matches that we've won. But yesterday was a funny one. I'm not religious. I was baptized as a kid, went to a Catholic school and what have you. I put my little small crucifix in my wall to show piece of the game, and my little a small gold crucifix in the coin pocket of my wallet. That got a little kiss before the first whistle went. Me and Pete went down to Bramley Moor for a little drink before the game, saw the ground. I did that before the Leeds game this season. So little things that I was doing, and you know, for those people who like myself who maybe aren't religious, but listen, if I'm wrong, then I call upon anyone and anything to listen, to help us across the line. So next season I'll definitely be carrying that little cross on my wallet for every single game. But you try and do what you can, don't you? You just try and do little things that you think might help. But like you say, you know, as a fan base, unbelievable. The scenes before the game, the footage from obviously the drone footage is incredible. We could hear the noise. We were in for the warm-up, me and Pete. We could hear the noise of the crowd outside and coming into the ground. And before the game, it was just incredible. It was busy. Everybody was in early. The noise when the players were waiting to come out, you know, for sort of 10 minutes was just absolutely sensational. Not heard anything like that in my time, I've got to be totally honest. And we know, you know, the fans were such a huge part of this club, and it's such a huge reason why we survived, you know, over the last two seasons. But it was just, you know, it's a game that I sort of want to quickly forget. I've got to be honest with you. It wasn't, you know, Sean Dyche for me deserves massive credit for what he did, what he's done since he's come in. Overall, we'll look at the wins that we've got. So five wins, he's got 4-1 at home. And then obviously the 5-1 away at Brighton. He deserves credit for getting us over the line. That was what he was tasked with doing. Fantastic. That, you know, and the setup yesterday, he couldn't do anything else. He literally couldn't do anything else, could he? You know, we've got all of our fullbacks injured. We've got no Dominic Calvert-Lewin as well. So what more could he do? So the setup obviously was fine. You know, we had James Garner playing like wing back, who I thought was absolutely fantastic. What a performance from him, getting better every single time I see him. But I do think Peter Manager does deserve some real credit there for one, getting us over the line and doing what he was tasked with doing. But two, I think in terms of his comments post-match, where he said a lot of what we were thinking as well.
Yeah, he really does deserve a lot of credit, and he deserves to have a full season next year. And, you know, look, let's be straight about it. I don't think any one of us prior to the start of the season would have been pleased about Sean Dyche being our manager. And when he's been linked with us in the past, the three of us have wanted him nowhere near the club. But given the situation we were in, you know, we needed a steady pair of hands, somebody that understands how to get the best out of a squad quickly. And, you know, it's cliche, stop the rot. And that's exactly what he's done. Exactly what he's done. You know, there were maybe two or three games where we had a bit of a wobble. And I think we probably questioned some of his decisions in terms of starting lineup and changes. But when you look at the position we were in and what he's got out of us, it's just astonishing that he's kept us up. It, like, you know, really, really is. He deserves so much credit. You know, made us tough to beat. You know, kept us in games. You know, you look at some of the results we got, some of the wins, and you know, some of the draws were, you know, we said it ourselves on the podcast. You're wondering, you know, could we have got the win? But those draws now, how important are they? You know, the points that have kept us up. And he seems to understand the club, doesn't he? He seems to understand the fan base. And, you know, like you said, his comments about, you know, I think that the fans having a hard edge, and, you know, the club being kind of fractured, the club having cracks but not being broken. That's the reality. You know, we need a summer now where big things need to change at the fundamental structural levels of the club for us to have a bright future. But I hope that he's a part of it. And I hope that we back him with the right sort of recruitment. That's going to be the key thing now. Can we get the right sort of players in to give him a, you know, a good opportunity to show what he can do? I mean, I said it not long after he came in. This is his biggest job in football. It's the biggest job he's ever had. It might be the biggest job that he's likely ever going to have. So let's hope he can be as successful as possible with us. And, you know, it's an opportunity for him to show us and everybody else what he can do. And, you know, look, he's got us back to being a tough Everton, hard to beat, aggressive, organised, dangerous at set pieces, staying in games late on. You know, we lost that, didn't we? You know, we lost that. We would go goal down and you could feel it inside you. You know, game over now. We're not gonna sniff, not gonna hope. Or if you concede late, you know, that's it. You know, we'd lost being the Everton that could, you know, that could turn things around. So you look at, like, the result of Chelsea, the Ellis Sims goal, getting back to 2-2, or, you know, just being able to be competitive over 90 minutes. That it's another essential that you need to be in this league, and he's found a way to instill it back into us quickly. So he deserves a huge amount of credit. And, you know, I'm not just saying it through Everton tinted glasses because I've now got some kind of romantic bias towards Sean Dyche, but he's got up in my estimation because he's not just come in and played the kind of 4-4-2 that everybody thought he would. You know, he's been adaptive. I mean, look, we've gone into the last game of the season. Fair enough, his hand was forced playing a back three or a back five. You know, I don't think anyone would have expected that from Sean Dyche. So he's not a one-trick pony. He's, you know, he's shown a lot of people, I think, a lot of different aspects to who he is since he's come in. So I really hope he gets a good opportunity next season, and he'll certainly have my full backing.
I think those words are absolutely spot on there, Pete. I think that was really well summarised, that. I think, yeah, you're right. He's changed our opinions, hasn't he? I think he's not just us. I think he's changed opinions of a lot of the fan base. What you see is what you get with Dyche. And, you know, you're not going to get De Zerbi football with him, are you? Or Pep, or, you know, he's not one of those fashionista type managers, you know what I mean? But fair play. I mean, he's, like Pete just said there, he's come in, he's inherited, let's be honest, a really imbalanced squad. And you've just summarised it there, mate. You know, no full-backs were fit yesterday. Okay, that's injuries as well, but we're still lacking in certain areas. Then you've got the centre-forward problem. You know, selling Richarlison, not replacing him. Selling Anthony Gordon in January, not spending the money on him. Relying on Calvert-Lewin, who's, you know, for me, he's shown what a top footballer he is and the little cameos he's had. You know, but he just can't stay fit. You know what I mean? So it's an absolute mess what he's kind of walked into. But he's had to adapt to it. There's at times where we've criticised him, where he's probably been maybe a little bit too negative or a little bit too cautious. You know, the game to Leicester springs to mind, Forest, where we were, you know, we could have probably put that game to bed, and then, you know, he's not gone for it, and he's sort of, the pragmatic side of him has kicked in. But like Pete said, those points now are crucial, which they are, yeah. So yeah, I mean, look, like you said, we're never ever gonna get you know, champagne football with him. But like Pete just said again, you know, he deserves a chance now to restructure this squad. He'll know the characters in there now. He'll know some of the players that you know, he wants to keep. He'll know some of the, you know, the areas where we need to improve, or we all know that, but he'll know as well. Certain players will obviously move on, you know, and for a fair play to him, he's endeared himself to the fans. You know, he is in the mould of an Allardyce and Benitez style. There's no doubt about it in that respect. But I think he's a lot warmer of a character, isn't he? And fans have taken to him because of that, as you know, if anything else.
I think that post-match interview, the ones I've seen with, obviously, Everton's official one, Sky Sports, when he said what he said about, obviously, it's not acceptable you know, for Everton Football Club, we shouldn't be in this position. And I think that he showed a sense of relief himself. He came across, I think, as a different person yesterday. I've got to be honest. I think he's sort of been, if you watch his press conferences and how he speaks post-match prior to yesterday, he comes across as quite a hard-line fella. I thought he almost softened a little bit in terms of how he spoke yesterday, but he spoke with a lot of emotion, a lot of clarity. And what he said was very, very true. And I like that. I like what he was saying. I think he felt the pressure. And he said himself, listen, I've been living it for 4 months. He knows, you know, and maybe at times he doesn't show it because he can't show, he can't afford to show it. But he has been living it. And he's been dealt a difficult hand, as we've mentioned, in terms of the injuries. Came in, didn't get any kind of backing in the transfer window in January. People forget that. We brought nobody in. We lost, obviously, Anthony Gordon, who was moved on. So, you know, the squad he thought he was inheriting was even worse. And then to throw into the mix the injuries, the suspension to the Corey for 3 matches was a massive, massive factor as well. We missed him hugely. So for him to get us out of the hole, albeit the last game of the season, as I say, he does deserve huge, huge credit for that. And I hope now, you know, that he is given that time. He's certainly given next season to stabilise. You know, if we're looking at Ames, we're looking obviously too far ahead. But if you're looking at Ames, the aim for next season is to, first of all, stay in the Premier League. But, you know, if you said we're sort of between 12th and 14th, and you're not going into the last sort of 2 or 3 weeks of the season looking to stay up, then that would be progression. And I think Sean Dyche can do that. He can bring that stability. We know now after 4 months of Sean Dyche what to expect in terms of how he usually sets up. We have become better and more of a threat from set pieces. We have looked that little bit stronger at the back. But obviously, players are going to get moved on. We know Yerry Mina, last game, obviously yesterday, that was announced. Jarrett Branthwaite due to come back in. The likes of Onana will be off. I think that's pretty obvious. There's a lot of players who are going to be moved on. So it's be interesting to see what we do in the transfer window. But I
agree with that point. You said 12, 14th there. I think first and foremost, he's got to get the balance of that squad right, hasn't he? You know, for years now, we've been, you know, we know now the reason why Mashiri getting involved, Usmanov getting involved, you know, in terms of, you know, almost kind of like a mini Bowley at Chelsea, isn't it? But on a lesser scale, you know, being involved with agents, not letting Brands do his job to sign players. You know, you've heard Brands come out in interviews recently saying, you know, we had these guys, you know, scouted, and then we suddenly Benitez goes and gets Rondon. You know what I mean? And things like that. I mean, we need to get rid of all that. It's the reason why we are where we are the last two seasons is an accumulation of, you know, a lot of bad decisions at the very top. And now they need to know. You know, Mashiri has shown signs this year of letting, you know, the likes of Thelwell and that get on with their job. Obviously, we've now been hampered by, obviously, financial fair play, haven't we? You know what I mean? We were linked with that Goikieres at Coventry. He looks a really good fit to the way Dyche wants to play. And, you know, he can hold the ball up. He's decent. He's a decent finisher. He can get in behind. He's good in the air. You know, and we were heavily linked with him, weren't we? And Amanda Brozier. And then we didn't get any of those deals over the line for one reason or another. And then we end up with Neil Mopay. You know, he's nothing like the profile of those players. You know what I mean? So we've just got, you know, Mopay will definitely be gone. He won't be in an Everton shirt again, and rightly so. He just doesn't, you know, fit the way we want to play. And for me, he's not a Premier League striker anyway. And then Yerry, you mentioned there, you know what I mean? He's missed just under half the game, sadly, because of fitness. But how can you not love Yerry Mina? I mean, we had Danny Donaghy on our podcast talking glowingly about him as a character. You know, the friendship they've got. You know, he's been posting on, obviously, Twitter recently about that. I mean, what a guy to have around training ground. It's just such a shame he's not been fit for, you know, for half his time here, because he's been vital, Mike, in terms of the results we've had recently. He got that last-minute goal last week. Okay, that wasn't the difference between staying up and not in the end, but it could have been. And then not only that, it takes us into this game, you know, with a lot more buoyancy because we've managed to, you know, get a draw, which then obviously made it a little bit easier for us. It'll be sad to see him go, but you know, he will always be welcome back at Everton as a player. It's just a shame we couldn't say goodbye to him yesterday for one reason or another. But you know, what a character. Personally, I don't know what you think. I'd keep Cody. You know, I'd quite happily let Holgate and Keane go, get Branthwaite back. I'd keep Cody personally as one of the defenders in there, purely because of his leadership skills. You know, and obviously, if we do want to play in a five, as he said himself, you know, he does play better in a five, as Dyche said. You know, and he's a leader. You know, we've been saying for years we haven't got many leaders. You know, him, Coleman, you know, possibly Tarkowski, maybe. You know, they're the leaders in the squad. There's not many in there. You know what I mean? And I thought he was excellent yesterday, by the way, in a high-pressure game. You know, he's come out the cold and played and played very, very well. He had a crucial, you know, Pickford semi-saved. You know, he kicked it off the line, basically, there. I thought he was outstanding yesterday. So, you know, there's loads of decisions to be made, but we've got to get that recruitment right. If we don't get that recruitment right and we're short again in areas again, then, you know, don't be surprised if we're scrapping and get away at the bottom again by January.
Yeah, the centre-half position is a bit of a question going into the summer, like I said earlier on. And you see Yerimina on his way. I thought yet again yesterday he was terrific, wasn't he? He was doing what he always does. Brilliant. And he winded up Solanke all game. And Solanke reacted every single time. The one you mentioned there where Cody cleared it off the line and Pickford obviously has gone down. He got injured, didn't he, at that particular point? And there was a little bit of a fracas between everybody and Solanke. And Tarkowski came steaming over. Mina was steaming over. And that's just what he's all about, isn't he? You know, we know he's great in the air. So even when Kiefer Moore came on, I thought Mina did well against him. You know he's going to wind people up. You know, he'd be through in some great tackles, a great block when Tarkowski lost it, edge of the box for later on in the first half. Great block from Mina. So we're going to miss him. You know, we are going to miss him. And him being fit and coming into the side late on in the season has been a blessing in disguise, and is one of the factors I think why we've stayed up, because you know Michael Keane was struggling hugely, and Yerimina comes in and brings that little bit of calm and all those major attributes that he's got. And then Connor Cody, like you say, I said it the other week, I was now more inclined if they want sort of £3 million for him, Wolves, then give it them. Because we need those kind of players in and around the squad. Fantastic yesterday. Fantastic, Connor Cody. You know, that's what he's all about. As you say, in a back three, Connor Cody is terrific. And he deserves immense praise, I think, for that performance. So a proper leader. And there's, you know, for that kind of money, assume we've got, you know, we are going to move players on. There will be some money to spend. It's a drop in the ocean, nearly, that, isn't it? That kind of fee. And I think...
Right, he's an England international for £3 million. Mm. Yeah, I mean, and he's a great character to have around the train. You know, his, you mentioned the interview afterwards with Dyche. His interview afterwards was superb as well.
Yeah,
he kept on saying, "Oh, we can't be here again. We were here last year." You know, and hold on, mate, you weren't even playing.
Yeah,
is that almost taking responsibility for it? And you know, and that's what you want. That's what you want. And then, look, at the end of the day, he's a local lad. You know, for him, it would be the move that he wants. And he wants to come back here. I think you'll know better than me, but his kids are at Finch Farm as well, aren't they? You know what I mean? So
They play for one of the. Well, I'm not sure if it's two kids, but definitely one of them plays for one of the academy sides at Finch Farm. So it suits. Yeah. I mean, it suits him, of course. His family are not far outside the city, so for him to be in and around this area is ideal for him. Hence why he made the move in the first place, and you know it was nailed on. He would have been signed if Frank Lampard was still here. He had a drop in form, we all admitted that, and he was rightly taken out of the starting 11 by Sean Dyche. But when he's come back in, when even off the bench, you know he's done a real job. You know, even against Man City, I think he did all right when he came off the bench, off the top of my head. And then to come in and start the game and play how he played, that shows, well, it's a testament to the man, really. and he's such a professional, and no reason why we can't make that deal happen. But you know, let's just go back to the game, just if we can, because one player who will be here next year, was given a one-year contract extension this week, is Abdoulaye Doucouré. 5 goals since Sean Dyche has come in. His best ever Premier League scoring season, I think I read yesterday. He scored some absolute worldy goals, hasn't he? You know, we didn't think he had them in him, to be honest with you, because his technique is a little bit hit and miss, to say the least. But if one man was going to pop up yesterday and get the goal for us, it was him, wasn't it? Because since Sean Dyche has come in, he's coming out of the cold. He's probably been Sean Dyche's most important player, or one of. But what a strike that is by Doucouré. And Gary Neville said, obviously, the Gansey was shaking. The ground was shaking for a good 10 minutes. I've never, ever heard a reaction to a goal like that. Seen, you know, heard the noise afterwards in terms of the songs. It was so, so loud. But what a strike that was. He couldn't have caught it any better. And I think if he started to do it another 100 times, he wouldn't hit it in exactly the same fashion, would he?
No, mate, he totally pured it, didn't he, right out of the middle. The balls fell kindly for him. Onana's competed for a header. I thought it was an issue. Onana who got the header, it wasn't, you know, but he put enough pressure on the defender so you know the defender could only nod it out to the edge of the box. It sat up perfectly for him. He's got his knee over it, and he's absolutely he just ripped it. It's one of those instant moments in sport where you haven't got time to think. You know what I mean? It's just instinct, and it was instinct. He just absolutely just laced it and caught it perfectly. Yeah, I think Neville was saying there was a slight deflection. I don't think it changed anything on the ball whatsoever. You know what I mean? It was going where it was going, and keeper had no chance. And their keeper had made a few good saves up to that point as well. You know, I was thinking we're going to have another Iverson moment here. You know what I mean? Because their main keeper was obviously out, apparently a family bereavement or something. And then, you know, they brought in a kid out the cold who then starts pulling off worldy saves. He pulled off a good save from Garner in the first half, pulled off another good save from James Garner. You know, and then obviously the save from Damari Gray with the header, which Gray should have scored. He sort of pulled out of the header. Yeah, you know I mean, that should have been a definite goal. But again, good save. And you're thinking, Jesus, this fella's going to have another Iverson moment. But thank God for that. And like you said, it's a hell of a finish from Doucouré. And you know, he's been like a new signing for Dyche. He wasn't able to sign any, obviously, in the January window. But Doucouré coming in out of the cold has actually almost been like a new signing for him. And he has been vital to us. And we saw how much he was missed after the sending off against Spurs. You know, that could have been a turning point for us in the season. You know, Harry Kane has said it before, you know, got him sent off, fellow professional, for behaving the way he did. And not only did that affect us in the Spurs game, which we possibly could have gone on and won because we were the better side, you know, it then affected us for the next 3 games after that, where we struggled to get results without Doucouré in there. But that's the way the game was going to be yesterday, Mike. You know, with no, like you said, no fullbacks, no forwards. We had a winger playing up front again. You know, it was always going to be a tight game. It was never going to be, you know, like Brighton where it all clicked the other week when we had Calvert-Lewin playing, was it? You know, it was always going to be a tight game. And they're difficult games to manage them because I said to you, you know, it's kind of that stick or bust scenario. I'd rather as a needed the win. If it had been, can you imagine what it would have been like if it was 0-0 then with half an hour to go? Because then the players don't know, well, should we go and try and get a goal? Or, you know, it basically would have been like it was for the last 10 minutes for like half an hour, wouldn't it? Just camped on the edge of our own box. But no, to be fair, it was a hell of a goal. And like I said earlier, it'll go down in history now as one of those goals, you know, that'll be replayed over and over again. But I thought, you know, look, every one of them yesterday, credit to the team. Credit to the team with the work rate, credit with their application. You know, there's a lot of pressure on those players yesterday. And look, the professional footballers, that's their job to stand up to that. But the way they handled themselves, they didn't let the emotion get carried away. You know, they were superb yesterday. And, you know, like special mention to James Garner, right? Like you said, who I thought was excellent at right wing back. Absolutely outstanding. You know, he you know, asking him to play in that position. He's a proper footballer, him. You know, he's got a football brain. You know, I think that could prove to be a very, very shrewd signing, that, by the way. But yeah, I was a little bit worried at the start. I don't know whether you felt this from where you were. They were getting in behind McNeil quite a bit on that side, early doors. and they were playing out from the back. And I felt initially, and I think Neville mentioned it on commentary, going, yeah, with the way Everton are set up here, Bournemouth have got an easy out here. They've got an easy out through their fullbacks, particularly on the other side with Onana, who's, you know, pressing down the right side. They were getting out quite easily playing out. We didn't know whether kind of to press or not to press. Eventually, I think we figured that out. But in the first 10 minutes, they put three or four crosses in, didn't they? Certainly down McNeil's side. And I was starting to worry a bit there, going, like, hold on, the system here is not working. But I think eventually we got to grips with it and we sort of controlled the rest of the game after that.
I think in terms of that situation, I think we know the importance of Dwight McNeil in an attacking sense. So obviously we know he's been hindered in that Wolves game when he was playing left back. So in that situation, he couldn't really get forward. Whereas yesterday, when you're a wing back, the idea is you attack and defend. So it was almost as if he was trying to push on, and he was pushing on, but then it was leaving gaps in behind, which is not his fault. You know, you should have to cover from centre halves and also your centre mids dropping in. So it was a little bit of a tricky situation. But like you say, Everton adapted well, I thought, and we did figure them out. And out of the two sides in the first half, we were marginally the better side. We gave up possession, which is what we've done quite often, but I'd certainly say we were the better side in the first half. Couple of chances, you know, the goalkeeper's made a couple of saves from Garner Gay, from James Garner as well. And things just weren't stopping for us really in that first half. And by the way, turning those round to shoot towards the Galaxy's in the first half was not well received either. They've done it on purpose quite clearly. Anything to get under our skin. But they were also wasting time from the first minute. As per usual, the referee didn't get a grip of it at any point in the game. You know, if it's us, do you remember, was it the City game where Pickford was getting pulled by the referee? Was Anthony Taylor in the first minute? So as soon as Pickford, he thought, wasted any kind of time, he was getting told, whereas Bournemouth was just doing whatever they wanted. It was just an absolute farce. But Everton, like you say, adapted. And you just wondered with if the goal will come. That was the big thing, because the methods never ever changed, did it? It was always very much a case of if we win the game, we're safe. So when it was 0-0, just need a goal, and Everton pushed, and you know, it comes in the end, of course, in and around the hour mark, and the relief was there. And I've seen footage since. Obviously, we were talking earlier on about when scores were coming through to us at Goodison. Looking at the footage from Leicester, you know, they were fairly buoyant. They were 1-0 up at the time. And then when it went through that we'd gone 1-0 up, the way that it all died down, it went scarily quiet. And, you know, it shows you what impact a goal can have on other games. I said this before the game. If we score, and obviously the fans find out that Leicester especially and Leeds, it's going to impact them and the atmosphere, and that impacts their players. So that's why it was so important. I wanted an early goal, didn't get it. But when it happened, we, not so much relaxed, but there was a little bit of relief, impacted things elsewhere. And we had a few hairy moments, didn't we, you know, before the end of the game, of course, none more so than that volley. Was it in stoppage time? It's Pickford. It's okay, good height, but he's got to be switched on to make that save, hasn't he? And he was. Parries it away, and you're thinking, oh, I think that was about 92nd or 93rd minute, and you can see the footage from the Everton fans, and it was just that, you know, don't do it, because again, if we concede, we're down. So typical Everton fashion, wasn't it? A 1-0 win, nervy, of course, but greeted with immense relief. I saw the linesman, actually. I was watching the linesman on our side, and I knew it was close to time. Fella behind me had his stopwatch on when they announced it, and I knew it was close. And I saw the linesman, he was about 15 yards on the pitch, so I thought the whistle's going to go here. Because he was gone, knowing the fans were going to come on. The whistle went, and then obviously one of those. I just sat down, sort of head in my hands, thinking about it. Just thankful that we'd survived. Obviously, we saw the scenes. There was a semi-pitch invasion. us, those of us who didn't run on weren't overly impressed, should we say. I think, personally speaking, you know, each to their own, totally unwarranted. What are we doing? What are we doing that for? And also what it did, you know, it galvanized the fans who were in the stands. You know, you heard all the shouts of sack the board. You heard all the shouts of not fit to run the club. And that, for me, was the ideal response.
Yes, the sack the board chants were totally warranted. Like you said, it galvanized the fans, some of them running on the pitch. It's not something we want to celebrate 2 years in a row. You know, pitch invasion at the end. I mean, last year it was complete relief. This year it was complete relief. But also, you know, the board, like I said before, Mashiri now, there's obviously lots of rumours flying around that we've agreed a deal, obviously, with an investment partner now to come in. You know, that will be the timing then where he has to announce that, obviously, Denise and Bill to step down. That has to happen. You know, it has to happen because it's a big reason why there's such fracture in the fan base right now. And, you know, they have to bring people in, you know, and allow the people in their jobs to do their jobs within the club. They have to. It's as simple as that. You know, we have to be run. We can't compete with the big boys in the league financially. You know, we had our moment in the sun where we were throwing loads of money around like kids in a sweet shop with no structure. But now we have to run like a Brighton, like a Brentford. You know, we have to be savvy in the market. You know, you look at Brighton already, this, you know, they've already got signings lined up because they know the likes of McAllister are going, Caicedo's going, possibly Matoma. You know, they know that's happening, but they've already got the players lined up. You know, that there is the you know, how you run a football club. And it's exactly how we should be running. You know, we know, for example, like you said, there's likely that Onana's going to go. We know that obviously Mina's going to, out of contract, he'll be going. There'll be other players leaving. You know, we should now have these players, their replacements lined up. Now, you'd like to think now, Thelwell and everyone else, you know, within the financial limitations that we will have, because there will be, you know, those players are now lined up. Yeah, and that's how we've got to operate now. It's as simple and as straightforward as that. If we get that bit right, I don't think we'll see what we saw yesterday, you know, in terms of where we are, in terms of, you know, last day of the season, trying to scramble and stay in the league. Because, you know, that recruitment piece is important. And you can do it. There are players out there if you scout them properly. You know what I mean? And you can look, like I said, I keep on referring back to it. You know, Brighton are just a superbly oiled machine. But that's taking a bit of time to do that. But the way they've done it is superb, and it's there to be envied, and it's there to, you know, they've qualified for Europe, and I'm so happy for them to do that because they deserve it. And we've got to look at that model and go, right, that's how we need to be operating. That's how we need to be doing it. You know, we've signed the likes of James Garner in now. You know, you look at the likes of Nathan Patterson, people, you know, they'll hopefully go on to be really good players for us. And the signs are that they are. But we also need to be looking at, you know, how else are we going to basically, you know, solve our goal scoring problems, because the biggest reason why we are where we were this season is the lack of goals. It's the lack of goals is the main reason why we are where we are. Defensively, Lampard chose, you know, to strengthen at the back, because obviously we, like, you know, you said earlier, when we conceded one, we look like we concede two or three. You know, he kind of did solve that to an extent, but then there was obviously still parts that where it was broken. And as a result, because we ploughed a lot of our money into that area, we then didn't obviously strengthen appropriately up front, and that's cost us. So, yeah, you know, the chance of sat the board, going back to your point, we're right, and you know, the fans have got every right to you know, to be singing that, and all of us believe the same, and they need to restructure that. Whether Mashiri stays on, only time will tell. I do think he will. I think he just needs these investment partners to come in now, which will fund the rest of the stadium. Hopefully put a bit of money into the club as well. And then, you know, let's see where we are after the transfer window. But, you know, I just hope, you know, we're organised for once, mate.
Well, for me, it's time. You know, it's potentially the great summer reset, really, isn't it? And it's a watershed moment, I think. I think survival is a watershed moment in terms of now the direction of this club. Because I've said it time and again, relegation equals potentially extinction, and people don't really want to believe it, but it had massive ramifications for our football club, more than maybe people even realised. And, you know, you think back over the years, and we shouldn't have to be have to be getting involved with these kinds of discussions. We shouldn't have to be thinking about Everton's plight from a money perspective and the fact we've been running to the ground, and you know, we've still got this independent commission situation that we've got hanging over our heads, which the rumours are it's going to be in and around October by the time we get any kind of resolution from that. But we've got a chance now this summer to wipe the slate clean, make the relevant changes at board level, which there's already a lot of talk about that. I would hopefully expect that in this week that we're now in, that we will see changes and we'll see certain people removed. And I think, you know, it's time for us all to start healing a little bit after a difficult last couple of years. It's time for Farhad Moshiri to build bridges, because he's going to be here. So it's time for him to build bridges and start to take action at his level. The relationship between fans and the board is irreparable. We know that. We know that's not going to change until, obviously, we have these changes at board level. And this is now the ideal time to do it. And I hope that Farhad Moshiri yet again realises how important we are to this football club, how important, once again, we have been to the survival of this football club. No other club does it. No other club. If you look at what I put out by the BBC, I think it was Saturday, it went out, and I was asked to put a little piece together about the game Sunday, what it means, ramifications, all that. And then you read what the Leicester fan put in particular. The Leicester fan said that, I don't care if we go down because we won the league a few years ago in the FA Cup. You know, and this is the mentality. There's no fans like ours. We've got elite mentality. The club haven't, but we have. And we expect our club to get in the Premier League, fighting on all fronts. It's that simple. And it's time now the board and the owner had that same kind of mentality. And we've got a chance now to reset, back the manager, let him start to bring his own players in. Let's get that balance of the squad right. Let's move players out who don't want to be here. Let's get the dead wood out. Let's move the players on here out of contract who we're not going to offer a new deal to. Let's wipe the slate clean and let's now look to move forward as a club and as a fan base. That's the key message for me for this summer.
Yeah, I can't help but agree with that, mate. I think all fans agree with that. You know, all of us now can hopefully relax and enjoy our summer now, because it's been absolutely torturous for the last few months in particular. So, you know, we can all hopefully relax. Like I said before, you know, we can work behind the scenes now. You know, we've got this ground to look forward to as well, haven't we? You know what I mean? We want to be going into Bramley Moor. This is Goodison's last season now, isn't it? You know what I mean? We want to be going into Bramley Moor as a Premier League club. You know, if that's not an incentive, then what is? You know what I mean? We've got to be looking to build a squad worthy of that stadium now. You know, you guys went there for a drink beforehand yesterday. The sheer size of it when you walk past it is so impressive. You know, can you imagine our fan base? The best thing about Everton Football Club is the fans. You just said there, you know, a lot of them have lived through success. You know, we sadly missed the 80s success, didn't we, that the club was, you know, when it was at the peak of its powers, when it was last at its peak of its powers. You know, we want those times again. You know, it's a lot harder nowadays with obviously football and the finances and everything else. It's almost now an impossible, but it doesn't make it impossible. You know what I mean? And we've got to be looking to get back to where we were, even if it was under the times and the Moyes, where, you know, we were punching above our weight. You know, we were basically pushing teams for for the Champions League positions, and you know, some of the nonsense spouted out by some Liverpool fans. You know, I had some Liverpool fans with me on this Portugal trip, and you know, it's embarrassing some of the stuff they were coming out with. You know what I mean? In terms of like, oh yeah, it'd be great if you went down, you'd actually win something then in the Championship. You know, comments. And I know a lot of that is sending the rod out looking for bites and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, I don't want to be having conversations like that. You know what I mean? It wasn't that long ago that Liverpool had Roy Hodgson there. We were finishing above them in the league. You know what I mean? And the Moyes and that. So, you know, I want us to have our football club back to a point where we're actually competing for things. The whole point of football is, you know, is you want to win titles. You know, we haven't been near a title for a long time, have we? You know, and then, yeah, that's where I want us to be. And that stadium is worthy of that. you know, Mashiri will sell up, and it'll be likely will sell once we're in the ground, and that will be his legacy. You know, the amount of money that's been pumped into the club from his side, that legacy as well will be that stadium. And we all know, you know, Goodison, as much as we love it, and it was at its very best yesterday, we need to move. We need to move. You know, well, we needed to move, and we need to move, and it's going to happen. And, you know, that noise, can you imagine that noise in that new stadium? You know, it'll be absolutely incredible, mate. And you know, and these are the positives we've got to work towards. And, you know, I just hope the club now make the right decisions for once, and you know, we can start to see things going in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, we put off looking forward to Bramley Moor, haven't we, for so many months? You know, it's something that we haven't been able to concentrate on, isn't it, at all? And we should be able to, should be looking forward to it. You know, there's no ground like Goodison Park. We know that. But we know we've got to move for our future. And yesterday was another one of Goodison Park's finest moments from a fan perspective, because, like I say, there's no fans like ours. The noise that was created was sensational. All game, we stuck with the players, stuck with the task. At times, it was so loud. You know, you mentioned there, Gary Neville saying against you was shaking. The ground was shaking to its core. It was just unbelievable. And Bramley Moor, I'm sure, will be able to replicate that and more. You know, over 10,000 more people in there. It's going to be tight. It's going to be compact, which is what it's all about. And you know, with the way that it's been designed acoustically, it's going to keep that sound in there. So it's going to be fantastic, of course. And we can now begin to look forward. We can spend this summer hopefully relaxing, seeing what the manager can do, bringing in his own players. Exciting to see who we can get through the door, and how we're going to line up in that first game of the season. But listen, we can all take a breath. We can all now look to switch off. We've deserved it. I'm heading off for a few days now to your homeland, Lee. Off up to Snowdonia for a few days. So I'm looking forward to that. And I need it. You know, it was either going to be, you know, the escape from Everton from a negative perspective or a positive one. So I'm delighted it's the latter. Delighted we've survived. But a big thank you to all of our listeners, of course. This season has been a difficult one as ever. We do appreciate everybody who comes on the show, who listens to the show, who interacts with us on Twitter, whether they agree with us or not. Social media is a massive, massive way for us to improve and build and speak to more people, and we do appreciate that. Taking your time out to, as I say, to listen to us is massively important to us. It allows us to do what we can do in supporting people within the community, within charities, fellow Everton fans. It allows us to do all of that because you listen. Massive, massive thanks to Sports Social. But being fantastic, we are continuing with them, despite trying to be poached by somebody else, which we will not go into. Fanatics, still linked with them. Fantastic. Look forward to the new Everton kit launch. Myself, Lee and Pete. Pete's got off, by the way. We haven't just ignored him for the last half an hour. He has had to get off, so he's gone. He's gone from today's show. We all appreciate each other. We enjoy doing the show. Lee wants me to mention the fantasy football because he won it. No one really cares, you know. The only thing that it means is he can go for another 12 months. Lee, over to you on that one. Do you want to fill everyone on the fantasy football?
No, you'd have to mention it, mate. You don't have to mention it at all. You're making out like I wanted it mentioned.
Oh, nice. You just dropped a massive message that flashed on my screen saying mention fantasy football, so I thought that was a bit of a hint.
Stop fibbing, mate. Come on, stop fibbing. No, but look, just to echo your comments, no, and thank you to everybody for who's involved. You know, all our guests that have been on, who've been brilliant and contributed. Thanks to everyone who listens, obviously, and interacts with on the social side. I know mainly you run that, Mike, and credit to you. You know, you you give up a lot of your time to run that. You know, you get involved in some great conversations online. I think you represent us brilliantly on Twitter and on other social platforms. Some conversations, obviously, aren't always the most pleasant, but that's the way social media is. But, you know, we fundamentally enjoy doing what we do. We get together, you know, weekly, sometimes more. We do the B-side to talk about other things in sport, which I really enjoy doing as well. You know, big thanks to the guests that have come on for that. You know, if anyone's not listened to any of those B-sides, they're a great listen. You know, the ones we liked with Danny Donachin particularly recently was brilliant. Really enjoyed doing that. We've had Troy Townsend on. That massive shout out to those guys. And we'll be doing a few B-sides again over the summer as well. We've got a few lined up. You know, a former favourite who's been on a lot of times now but doesn't have the time anymore, El Pavote, he'll be coming on over the summer with Tim to talk about obviously their business now in terms of, you know, scouting and everything else and the clubs they're working with. I'm looking forward to doing that one. And obviously, you know, everyone's a big fan of Piv. He's a great guy, knows his stuff. But yeah, just big thanks, like you just said there, to everyone involved. It allows us to sort of, anything we make from it, we reinvest it, like you said, a lot of it into local charities. We do a lot with the Everton in the community guys. Big thanks to them, you know, particularly with the guys from the Veterans Hub and things like that. I think we've done a lot with those guys as well. But yeah, no, look, fundamentally really enjoy it. Really enjoy, you know, just having, like we said at the very start when we started, just try and have a sensible conversation about our football club and a football club we all love. And fortunately, you know, we've gained a little bit of traction, and you know, it's great. It's great to have these conversations. So big thanks.
But you do want to mention that you won the fantasy league, didn't you?
Oh yeah, and I won the fantasy football.
So we put that in there. So Lee's won once again. So he can glue for the next, as I say, for the next 12 months. I think I finished 125th out of 128. So I had a fantastic season. Escaped relegation by a place like Everton. So I've done quite well there, I think.
I think that sums up our football knowledge there, mate. You finished 125th.
Well, I think it sums up the fact that I switched off the Fantasy League in about December. But we'll say no more about that. But yeah, fantastic season for us as a podcast. Difficult time, as we know, but we do enjoy getting together again and having these counselling sessions, which is what they've been for the last sort of 9 or 10 months or so. So we can now go off into the summer, like Lee said, get a couple of B-sides out, of course, a couple of transfer shows, of course, as well as hopefully we start to get some players in. But I think it's all time for us to go and have a little bit of a lie down. For those of you who enjoy it, a pint or a nice glass of wine. Have a few of them over the summer. Enjoy your holidays. And we will be back, as I say, over the course of the summer with more Everton chat. Hopefully with in a more relaxed tone. But thanks for listening. We enjoy doing the show. We enjoy interacting with everybody. And we will catch you soon.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.